Okay, so we will proceed with my colleague, Senator Borelli.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'd like to bring up our first presenter, Mr. Eric Speckin. Can staff help him with that?
And Mr. Speckin will need his podium raised if he'd please get assistance.
Is this here?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Speckin, would you please state your name and background before you commence your presentation?
Sure. My name is Eric Speckin, is how the last name, but I answered everything. So
okay, and make sure the mic is very close to your mouth if you need to raise the table more.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, so Eric Speckin, I'm a forensic chemist and a forensic document analyst. I've been examining documents and related issues to documents such as computers, fingerprints and things like that for nearly 30 years now. I work at a private consulting firm. I work in our Fort Lauderdale office. Our main office is based in Michigan. I've examined election cases since the early, probably the mid to late 1990s and continuously since then. I've examined from Scantron ballots to regular ballots to voting systems, computers, data, all the things associated with counting and determining outcomes. I've been trained in the examination of question documents in 1993 to 1995 by my father, Leonard Speckin. He's the retired chief document analyst for the Michigan State Police. And then a one-year training program dealing with paper and ink with Richard Burnell. He's the retired deputy director of the National ATF Laboratory, and that was from 95 to 96. I've been in private practice since for the same firm, and this is what I do every day: documents, inks, and related data associated with that. That's a quick background summary. I'm happy to answer further questions, but that's a quick summary.
No, Mr. Speckin, you're now free to begin your presentation.
So I examined, as I said, ballots throughout my career. I was contacted when the audit was going on here in Maricopa County and asked to provide assistance to look at the ballots, documents, inks, printing processes, CPS codes, which is a counterfeit protection system on color copiers and color printed documents that can determine when a document was printed and where it was printed. When I arrived, I wasn't able to examine the actual ballots. That part of the process was already over here. I was only able to examine photographs that were taken to determine anything that I could. So I noticed that many of the ballots did have a CPS code, but the photographs were not of sufficient quality and zoomed in to the correct areas to determine exactly what the CPS code said. So I'm able to determine that there are a series of yellow dots making up a CPS code. I just can't determine from the photographs what it is. The CPS code is still there on the ballots. This is from the 2020 election. I haven't been provided the piece of the paper to look at that. So that's one part that it exists. We just don't know what it says. The second part of the examination was to look at the data spread. And I found that there were 61 groups of ballots. So the ballots are typically sorted into groups of 200 for check and balance purposes, the way they're scanned, the numbers line up, things like that. And that's common. Sometimes it's to 50, sometimes it's to 200. And I found that there were 61 groups of 200 that had over 90% for one candidate, which is a little unusual in a race that's very close. In a 50-50 or a 60-40 race, you wouldn't normally find that unless it was by geographical area. In other words, there could be one geographical pocket that could have a higher percentage. But this was in the mail-in collection center. So all the mail-in ballots and the early voting ballots came back to a central collection center, and they were mixed up. So in these groups of 200, it wasn't specific to any one geographical area, precinct, district, neighborhood, anything like that. So 61 that had over 90% for one candidate. But more amazing to me was that there were 58 for one candidate and 3 for another that had 90%. That is a pretty good indication that someone had sorted ballots ahead of time to get them into these piles. Why or what the purpose is, I have no idea. But you wouldn't normally find that sort of distribution of a high percentage for one candidate. And if you did, you should find roughly the same for each candidate, right? So if there's 60 piles of 200 and they all have 90%, you'd expect 30-30 or something like that. But it might be 25-35. I can get that there's going to be statistical anomalies. But 58-3 is really strange. The other finding here was that we had approximately 25,000 ballots that were not created from the PDF that is used for the election process. So in other words, the election provider comes up with ballots and it's specific to a geographical area because the person that lives in this neighborhood might not be voting for the same people that live in that neighborhood or another neighborhood. So here in Maricopa County, from memory, you had 5,012 or something like that, just over 5,000 different permutations and combinations to the ballots. Then that's multiplied by two because there's a Spanish version that's available for each one of these ballots. But it's the same ballot with the same people, just in a different language. So we've got we'll just say 5,000 different ballots for now, that are created ahead of time, and those are created in PDF. Now, the big reason why is that you have a third party send out mail-in ballots, so those have to be created in advance. And second, for your early voting, you have vote on demand. So in other words, even if I live way out in the corner of the county, but I work downtown, I could go to something downtown that could print my ballot from my area, and I could vote here. It's convenient. A lot of people do that. It's a great system. So these PDFs are created in advance. They're obviously good quality PDFs, and when they're printed, they should look roughly or exactly the same. In this group of ballots, I find that the quality is severely degraded from what a PDF would be as if printed on demand, or if printed by your third-party provider who prints these all the time. But what's more strange is it's not just that the ballots are not printed well or degraded, it's that they all have the same defects and came from the same source. So, in other words, if you have, and I have my report that I can show you, and I'm happy to give it to you because I brought a copy with the graphics in it. And if we go to page 3 of the report, I have a couple examples of the circles where you fill in, right, for the candidate. And there's breaks in the line. So what I did is I took on the computer screen, I took an acetate overlay like my professors in college and teachers in high school used to put on the projector, right, and you could write on it. So I took one of those acetates, I put it on the computer screen, and I marked with a Sharpie where the breaks in the line were, right, in the circle. And then I moved it to the next ballot, and you can see that the breaks in the line are in exactly the same place. So it's not a function of a poor printing, like the ink didn't go on the ballot correctly, or it was a printer that was running out of ink or something like that. The process and the image is being degraded over time, either through multiple copies, scans, something like that, and it's in exactly the same place. So these came from the same source. And I've got a series of four different ones showing that. This on the fifth or the sixth page shows what the actual circle looks like on regular ballots. So it's perfectly intact. It's what you'd expect from a high quality print and what we all see when we get our ballots. That's what we expect. I've also got the locations of where these anomalous ballots came from, as labeled by pallet and box, which is where they were photographed from. So I'm happy to leave this here with you, and it, in the sense of a picture's worth a thousand words, it's maybe a little easier to understand if you have that to see. The second part is on, do I give that to you? Okay.
And we'll have that distributed to the members.
I'm sorry, I only brought one copy.
No, we'll make copies and we'll enter that into the record. Thank you, sir.
Okay, no problem. Thank you. So the other issue is on what could happen. So when you have these, what does it all mean? That's what I'm asked most frequently by clients and people and everything. What does it all mean? Well, when you have a scanner or a tabulator, that's a machine, but it's run by software. So software is telling it what to do, how to interpret it, and what to get. So the thumbing portion of it that makes the ballots go through, that's the machine, which is like when you go to the bank and it counts the bills for you, the thumbing portion that runs it through, that's a machine. But what it does and how it reads it is driven by computers and software and inputs. So I've looked at other areas in the country, and I've been given permission by some of the places to discuss what I saw there as to what might be an explanation for these things. So in Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I found that there were hundreds of ballots that were scanned multiple times. So we've got the exact same ballot that's counted multiple times. It's run through the scanner and counted over and over. I also have, it's very similar to what is seen in Maricopa County, I have 17,000 roughly, maybe 16,000 images that are of a degraded quality. In other words, the scans are poor and like this. And I have images to show as well. Again, so in the picture's worth a thousand words category. So I have, this is what the images, this is what a good scan looks like, which is a high quality, it's legible, you can read it, and so on. And then you can see what the poor scans look like. And really underneath the words presidential electors, you can't even read the text, it's so poor. One of the issues that was brought up was, well, it was just a malfunctioning scanner, right? In software settings could do that, there could be something wrong with the lenses, the optics, the machine itself. And I get that. But I have 3,000 that are interspersed that turn out just fine on that exact same scanner. Well, one of the reasons that you could have for these poor qualities to get rescanned is that the ballot has a little unique number at the bottom. And if the machine scans the same number, it's supposed to know that, hey, we've already scanned this ballot, something's wrong, we don't count it again. But if it's of such poor quality that you can't read it, it could easily scan it twice. So that could be a way. Now, I haven't been able to match up these 17,000 to say they've all been scanned twice, because that's an enormous undertaking. There's nothing text-wise that you can say, well, here's the text that I'm looking for, and here's this, here's that. You have ovals that are filled in very systematically and similarly, like most of us do. Every now and then you get a unique one where someone puts a curly Q or something, and that's an easy one to go look for. But we have found some where they've been scanned twice of these low-quality images. But having 17,000 of these images that, again, it doesn't, the idea that it was a scanner that was working improperly doesn't make sense. You've got 3,000 of them that work just fine. When you are told that you can't examine the paper itself to see what it looks like, it's shrouded in secrecy. In other words, there's no transparency when this happens. You have a machine that does it, you have a computer that gives you the answer that the machine said, and then you can't look at anything to see if it verifies or checks or balances. That's where the problems come in. We've seen, and I wasn't involved, but I've seen the reports, where you have a county in Michigan, Antrim County, where the software settings changed who was the winner of that small area, right? I'm not saying the whole election, but that small area. So the software settings A, person X won. Software settings Y, person Z won. That just goes to show you that the software can do something to change how it's done. There was a scanner in Tennessee, in Williamson County, Tennessee, and it had a certain error code that was causing problems. QR signature mismatch was the name of the code. And They had a big investigation. I believe the EAC was there. They couldn't figure out what the problem was. I don't know what the problem was. All I'm told is that there was a fix to it. I don't know what the fix was. But when we look at the system log files in Georgia for the 22 election, dozens of counties in Georgia have the same signature mismatch error code. In other words, whatever the fix was hadn't been distributed, or at least implemented, to other counties to fix the same thing. And I've got a short summary with me on the signature mismatch code, where it was found, what the software was, how it pertained, and so on, along with the copies of the relevant portions of the EAC report and the Williamson County, Tennessee findings. And the examples of the S-log files or the system log files showing the same error code in the one that's demonstrated here is Fulton County in two different places, but dozens of counties in Georgia had the same error code. But when you don't have the chain of custody, when you don't have ballot control, when you don't have control of the ballots from the time they're printed to the time they're distributed to the time they're counted, you don't have the ability to go back to determine exactly what happened and where they came from. But when you see things like we had here in Maricopa, like we had in Allegheny, where you have ballots that didn't come from the PDFs or from the official ballot process, whatever that process is for whatever area it is, yours is slightly different than other areas, but very similar, you have to at least be, I would think, want to look into how did these ballots show up to be counted. If you don't know, which I'm told that we don't, where did they come from? And what I'm trying to say in the report that you have in front of you from Maricopa, or that you're getting put in front of you now, is that we have many of these with this CPS code that would tell us where it was printed and how it was printed, and it's available. It's there. It didn't disappear. It's still there. We can go look at it. If the ballots still exist, we can look at it. I've been a part of other recounts, other counties, and I've heard the logic of, well, if we just hand recount it, it's the same as the machine, and it comes out that the numbers are the same at the end of the day. And in some instances, that has been true, but it doesn't account for where the ballots came from that are being counted. So in many of these hand recounts, I haven't been able to even look at what precinct that the ballot was from. In other words, we might be looking at a vote that's on the back on a two-sided ballot, and you see that the vote is here. We're just counting that. We're not even looking at the front to see where it was from. Not to mention the image quality and things like that of these mysterious ballots that we've talked about in Pennsylvania and here in Arizona. No one's even looking for that in a recount. So the ballot control, the transparency issues of what did happen are of a big concern. The software-driven part is obviously user input. And, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember them saying with the computers, it was garbage in, garbage out when you wrote a program. So you write a program to do X, and you get Y for an answer. Well, that's what the program was told to do. So it's all in how the program was set up that you get the answer. And the setup of the program, how it's run, and verifying that it did it correctly is of the utmost importance. And secondly, what is put in? Where did the ballots come from? How did they get there? And if they're different, why don't they look like the other ones? Where could they have come from? The ballot sorting is something that's a question that I don't know if it has an answer, but that's something that I've always been curious about, how it got to that point where there were such a discrepancy in how they were organized. I'm told I have a few minutes left, so I don't know if this is a good time for me to say, let me answer questions. I have these two reports here. I have that I just talked about. I have one other one on the duplicate scanning of the ballots that I talked about. So the image is here showing two different CVR, which is cast vote record, with the exact same shapes of the circles filled in. But you can see it's not the same scan. In other words, the same scan wasn't counted twice. The same ballot was scanned twice and are super close, but subtle differences between them, because it was the same thing scanned two different times. and I've got several examples here. And there's also duplicate CVRs that are mentioned. There's about 50,000 instances of non-unique CVRs. In other words, the scanner or the tabulator says, this is the first ballot, second ballot, third ballot I've scanned. That should be unique. We've got about 50,000 instances in Allegheny, not here. I haven't seen that, where it's a non-unique number, where it came from. And then finally, I'll just say that we have one other instance, and I've been given permission to talk about this, in Fulton County, Pennsylvania, where we have an IP address that there's a connection between the computer or the adjudication station, a part of the voting system, that connected to a foreign IP address. And we've recovered the IP address from the adjudication station that there was a connection to that IP address at some point in time before the election. I don't understand how that can happen, how we can allow that to happen. That is the problem with having non-secure systems, having computers and systems with modems, LANs, Wi-Fi, that sort of thing, that are supposedly DNA or unenabled. I forget what the English word is for that, sorry. Disenabled or turned off. It may or may not be the case. I'm sure in some instances that is successful in turning it off. I don't know. But in some instances, and specifically in this one, it was not. And that is also not only a transparency issue, but a pretty significant issue to me on security of our election, that the data can be transmitted to anywhere, let alone to a foreign IP address, in some form or fashion. Whatever that data was, however it was transmitted, and what the purpose was, I don't know. And that's the IP address, the finding, and the station here. So I have those four reports that I talked about here.
And I'm happy to answer questions. If you would go collect those from Mr. Spakeen so that the chair can enter them into the record, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Yes. Questions, please.
Yeah, I'm happy to answer questions and leave some time for your questions. I didn't want to talk the whole time.
I have a question for you if nobody else does. Thank you. First, thank you for coming to speak with us today, Mr. Spakeen.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let me ask you this. Is it possible that degraded quality of the ballots can be caused by paper size or thickness issues?
I don't think so. Paper size, no. The papers were the same size because we have the scale in the photographs, so that wouldn't even be it. Paper thickness wouldn't cause the improper printing that I can think of. I mean, I've examined hundreds of thousands of documents and been to printing schools in Canon and all over the country. I've never seen that happen. I'm sure not going to sit here and tell you it's impossible because I don't know. I haven't actually seen the piece of paper, but I can't come up with a way that it could be, but I'm not going to say impossible, no.
Madam Chair, I've got a question.
But different size, I think we can rule out. Thickness, I can't answer that one definitively.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Spakeen, you had mentioned the CISA report and the EAC report from Williams County, Tennessee. I've got those. The Senate members had that from we had a previous committee where we exposed that information. House members did not have until today. It's on. You hear me? Anyway, I've got a couple questions, follow-up questions. Your report that you did back in 21, we know we turned that over to the Attorney General's office. Did the Attorney General's office investigators contact you for a follow-up?
I've not been contacted by anyone to this point, no.
Madam Chair, Mr. Spakeen, we had that report. I know it was done in the audit. You were contracted, and we turned everything over to the Attorney General's office. None of the investigators from the criminal side or the civil side contacted you, sir?
No investigator, no attorney general, no one from the state of Arizona has contacted me about my findings in that report or any other part of those findings, no.
And when did you turn those in, if I may ask?
My report, I believe, is dated September of 21. When it got turned in, I don't know, but I think it was shortly after. Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Madam Chair?
Mr. Vice Chair, you have a question.
Madam Chair, Mr. Spakeen, Are the same sort of PDF files used for pre-printed ballots, like early ballots, as they are for ballots that are printed at vote centers?
I believe that it should be the same PDF with a minor exception that in some areas, and I can't say specifically in Maricopa County, it may say early voting on it, or it may say mail-in, or it could say absentee. Mail-in and absentee are commonly used as the same, but some areas call it different. So it should be the same ballot, right, the same configuration, same layout, same spacing, but it might have extra words on it. I don't recall if yours had it. I don't recall. I mean, it was 18 months ago when I looked at it.
Madam Chair, Mr. Spikin, did you observe any of these degraded print quality issues with early ballots? Did you have occasion to examine early ballots? And if you did you observe these issues with early ballots?
Yes. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yes, I saw, and yes, that's correct. I did see that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Spikin, did you observe any pattern with respect to the ballots that were degraded? If it was early in Election Day ones, were they from certain geographic areas? Were they printed at a certain location? Is there any pattern that could be observed?
So the printing part I can't answer. The CPS code would tell us what machine printed it, which could lead us back to where it was printed. Which would lead us back to where it was printed. The decipherable patterns, I don't know geography here to answer that, but I did list various areas where I found more of them in my report. There might be a pattern someone else sees, but nothing that I've been able to say is a pattern or there's something to it. It might be something that someone else recognizes, though.
Mr. Spikin, to the untrained ear, would you please explain what CPS stands for and explain the impact and significance of these codes as they are on various documents?
Sure. So early when color copiers and color printers started coming out, the government said, wait a second, people could use these to create bearer instruments, whether it be stock certificates, money, bonds, something phony out of this because technology is getting to be pretty good and people might not be able to tell the difference. So the government asked manufacturers to put in a CPS code, and it's called Counterfeit Protection System. And it's a series of yellow dots, and they're very small, and it has a unique grid pattern. Now,
Are they visible to the naked eye?
That would depend on the eye. So if you know what you're looking for, and I've examined tens of thousands of them, I'd like to say yes. These eyes are getting a little bit older, so I might need a magnifying glass. But I know where to look, and I know what to find. I would say probably not, though. To the average eye, no. To a very trained eye in a specific instance on a blank piece of paper, I'd like to say I could still see it. But if it's interspersed with text, even I might not see it without magnification. So a photo that you can zoom in on that's high quality or just a small magnifying glass like you'd buy at Target would work. So this code, depending on the manufacturer, can tell you what machine and what day something was printed. So the most common is commonly called a Xerox pattern, and it's a series of grid. It's a grid with a series of different binary numbers. So 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and whether dots are in these certain areas, you can decode the serial number of the machine, and then there's a break in the line or break in the code, and then it would be the date, and it would give you the date and the time that this was printed. It would tell you, of course, if the same one was printed once and then it was recopied, or if multiple ones were printed because it would take multiple seconds to do such a thing. That's the code that it looks like it has based on the checkerboard or grid of the yellow dots that I could see in the photographs that I could zoom in on, but I couldn't get the complete picture. So it's a series of yellow dots imparted at the request of the government on purpose to detect counterfeits, forgeries, and tracking of color printed papers.
And so the significance of this wonderfully elemental explanation you've now helped me with, the significance of this across ballots and the validity of ballots, could you explain that in simple terms?
Well, sure. I mean, the two elements that I talked about. So you've got the date it was printed, and you've got the machine serial number it was printed on. So number one, we'd be able to know, do we have multiple machines printing these or just one? Second of all, where is it, right? Who bought it? Was it one of the printers that was at a site? What site was it? Was it a third-party vendor? Whatever. We can figure that out, trace it back. The second part on the date and time would be, is it printed? I mean, it's theoretically possible after the election. I don't know. Is it printed before the election? Is it printed when it was supposed to be printed? And then lastly, as I just said, was it printed multiple ballots over time, or the same ballot copied 1,000 times, or 17,000, as it were?
And so your conclusion is?
I don't know. They haven't given me the ballots to see. It's there. I don't have it. And it's not just me. I'm not the only person in the world that has access to this information. It's a CPS code that's out there. Other people could determine it too. I'd be happy to do it if I was asked, but I mean, it's not like I'm the only one with the key to the lock. It exists.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Borelli.
Yes, Madam Chair, you brought up the Tennessee report. You'd mentioned something I've heard of, like, the Python script in Pennsylvania?
There's a Python script it's detailed in the report that was part of the same adjudication workstation that was present as the foreign IP address.
Madam Chair, did you say foreign IP?
The IP address, so the routing for the computer that it connected to is not registered in the United States. It's in Canada. The IP address that showed the connection. And it's the IP address itself is in the report. It tells the adjudication workstation serial number that it was on, where it was found. It's in the deleted space, so it's only fragments, of course. But the Python script and the IP address were found on the same adjudication workstation.
And this was to the AG that you submitted that?
That is not submitted to the AG. That's in Fulton County, Pennsylvania. It has not been. I don't know. I don't have knowledge if it's been submitted to anyone at this point.
Okay. And, another follow-up on that. You know, a lot of people get confused because we say the voting machines, you know, there's a machine and then there's a computer. This is all computer we're actually talking about a lot of these anomalies.
Right. Well, first, it's all a system to me, right? Yeah. So the system is created of computers, machines, and software that runs both. So to me, the machine is like the thumbs that feed the ballots through, that opens an envelope, that straightens something out. The rest of it's computers, whether it be hardware or software in the computer, tells it what to do and what the answer was when it did what it was told to do.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Spikin, is it a good idea to have components made from foreign countries to handle our elections?
According to Eric, I think it's foolish. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me why you would. But even more so, if you're going to have a machine that you want to not connect to the outside world, you want to have it be a tight system, right? Why would you get a machine that has a modem, that has a LAN connection, that has a Wi-Fi, that has a cellular modem, and then you're going to create something that is supposed to turn it off, which may or may not be done or may or may not work, may or may not still be in place? Why are you getting something with the ability to even do that, let alone where it's sourced from? That's my question.
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
To follow up, didn't that also include unblocked portals in a computer?
So that would be it, right? So there's different kinds of portables. Yeah. Portals, a cellular, a Wi-Fi, a LAN, which is the old cable that plugs in that looks a little bit like a phone cord but a little wider. Of course, I don't think we have many phone modems anymore, but they might exist.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe like a thumb drive, sticking a thumb drive in a computer.
Well, a thumb drive would probably be necessary because you'd have to get the new ballot configurations for the next election on the system at some point in time. You'd have to have a way to put that information on there. How it's done, how it's controlled, and what the process is for what was put on there is highly significant. Mm-hmm. But I think you would have to have, as I see it anyway, some manner to put the next election cycle's ballots on there, or this election cycle if a ballot were to change, if someone died or whatever, I don't know. You'd have to have a way to put that on there.
One more question.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Did Georgia and, did you find the same pattern in Georgia and Tennessee?
So I didn't examine Tennessee myself. I only have the report of the EAC with what was found, okay. That code, and the same code was found in dozens of counties in Georgia, yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mr. Spikin, Are you familiar with MoFi, and do you know if there, I know you're really here for the paper, but since we're talking about connections, is it possible that we use something called MoFi here in Maricopa County?
I'm not familiar with that term. In Maricopa, I wasn't asked to examine the computer system, so I'm not up to speed as I am on other areas of computer systems. So I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
Thank you.
I have one more question.
Okay.
You had said the CPS code, do you call it? Is that only for commercial printers? I mean, you can buy at Walmart, or is Runbeck is unique type of thing, commercial?
No, many printers have it. I'm not going to say that every printer manufactured has it, but many, many have it, and clearly printers you can buy at Walmart do have it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Printers, color laser printers and color laser copiers have this code, not 100%, but it's very, very common. And there's a list that don't that's out there. But far more do than don't.
Madam Chair, so to follow up, so which means if you have that code, you could identify which printer it came from?
If it is the code that I think it is, based on the appearance of the dots that I that I see in some of the photographs and the geometric pattern of, I believe it's 8 by 16 or whatever the square would be, the rectangle would be, then yes, that one's an easy one to decode. You don't have to go to the manufacturer. We know it. It's out there in the public realm, and other people can do it as well.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Spikine, I have one final question then. Obviously, voters are very concerned about the ballot printing issues that occurred on Election Day in the last general election. Is there some way that we can use these dots to track down the source of the problem and figure out why it happened and stop it from happening again?
It's absolutely possible. Until I know what the dots show and where it leads, I can't answer if that's the solution. But it's very possible that is one avenue that could get us there, and it is possible it is the avenue that could get us there. That answer, of course, being I can only answer for the 2020, so not the 22 election, because I haven't seen those ballots. I'm answering for 20 election.
Senator Shamp, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Spikine, thank you for being here today. You said something that intrigued me. You said that the IP address was from a different country that these computers were relaying with. And my question is, the places where you found the error code, the difference, you found them in Tennessee as well as in Georgia, they had the same error code. Was the IP address the same that was accessed on those computers?
So I don't know the answer to that one. So I didn't do Tennessee. All I have is a report from the EAC. Mm-hmm. But in Georgia, I was only given the system log files, not the forensic image of the system. In other words, the adjudication, the tabulators, and the main EMS server. So I don't have that information. It's not in the just you would see it or it prints. I mean, it was in a deleted space. You had to make a forensic image of that and search through the slack space or the deleted space to find it. And I haven't been given that opportunity in Georgia, so I don't know the answer if it exists or not in the same way.
I have two questions for you. What did you discover after you began your examination? What did you discover that you didn't expect? And the corollary to that then will be, how would you advise us as a legislature? Go ahead.
The first part is rather interesting. So as in any case, you get a call from someone saying, what can you do and what would you look for? And, I've examined all these, just like I said when I got here, election cases. All the things I said I would look for is not what I found here. So I didn't expect to find that you'd have these 20-some thousand degraded images that were from another source, and I sure didn't expect to find they would all be from the same source, in other words, have the same problem. As to what's going forward, I think there's three central issues. Number one is ballot control. So when a ballot is printed, where does it go and when does it come back, and how is it tracked?
Chain of custody.
Chain of custody of the ballot. Chain of custody perhaps is a wonderful thing, but it's not going to be formal in the sense that everyone's going to have a signed receipt like we do for a murder weapon that was used, that signed by all the people that saw it. It's not going to be quite that formal, but some sort of chain of custody. Control of the ballots once they arrive, especially if they're mail-in ballots. Control of what happens, where they are, who touches them. You can't have ballots swapped in and out. In other words, you can't have somebody sort a bunch of ballots, and in theory, this pile for this person is gone, and now we have these ballots that were printed from God knows where subbed in for it. I'm not saying that's what happened, but we all have to avoid a situation where that could happen. That's what scares people. And then the third is how they're counted. So transparency in how they're counted. Either a hand count, or if some sort of instruments or computer system is used, it has to be transparent in how it's done, what it's connected to, how it works, what the inputs are, what the outputs are, and at least be able to look at such a thing before the results are, I forget what the word that you use, confirmed or set in final form or whatever the word is. I forget.
Canvassed? Certified or canvassed?
Certified. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. Sorry. So before it's certified, you'd want to make sure all these things are in check and done the correct way. So we don't have a situation like we had in Antrim County, Michigan, where the software was, I don't know what the term that was used, but improperly used or improperly set. And no one knew until the very end when the results didn't seem to match with what was expected. And all of a sudden, oh, my goodness, there is a problem. Or you have a case like Allegheny County where you have the same ballot being scanned multiple times. We don't know how many that happened, but to even find a couple hundred where that happened, let alone there could be 17,000, I don't know the answer yet. That's the fact that any are being scanned multiple times is problems. So when they come in, what happens, how they're done, and how it was done before an outcome. Hand counts have worked for a really long time. I don't want to sound like I'm anti-technology. But that's, I wish it were my role to tell you, but it's really not. But there's so many things that can happen with computers based on the garbage in, garbage out concept. It's scary to me too. And without transparency, that's why, I think that's why people are scared.
Senator Borelli.
Oh, Madam Chair? Yeah.
Representative Heap.
Madam Chair, Mr. Skeen, I want to just drill down on something in the report that you gave us that I'm just reading. Now, whenever we're talking about anything highly technical, I always advise people, explain it to me like I'm five. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's try to keep it as clear so that everybody understands and everyone watching at home can understand what we're talking about.
Can I just ask which report, just before you ask the question?
Oh, sorry, this is your executive summary?
The Maricopa one. Okay.
The Maricopa executive summary.
Go ahead, sorry.
Okay, so you talk in there about printer anomalies that were happening, where in multiple ballots, if I understand right, have the same anomaly or the same errors repeated. Can you first of all just explain what you mean by that? What's the anomaly you're talking about?
Sure. So anomaly means different than normal, right? So we have a normal ballot that's printed. I have the PDFs that were created. They're all of good quality, all 5,000 times 2 or 10,000, counting the Spanish. And we have ballots that are printed where the circles are just fine, completely intact. They look great. Everything's fine. Just like the ballot I voted on, just like probably the one that you voted on. The anomalous appearance is twofold. The first is that it's degraded and not like the other PDFs. In other words, it has these breaks in lines. It has unusual formations to characters. It has jagged vertical and horizontal lines because it's a raster effect like old fax machines would have, kind of jagged edges. And the second part of the anomalous characteristics are that not only that, but it wasn't just a result of something being copied or scanned poorly before it was voted on, because they're all the same. In other words, the same errors or the printing anomalies or differences that exist in one are found across the board in many, many.
Madam Chair, Ms. Piskin, so if you were to see a series of ballots in let's say a box that all had exactly the same codes, what does that suggest occurred?
Well, I assume the word code is different. You mean anomaly still?
I mean anomaly.
Right, sorry. Okay. So if you have that, it's suggesting that they're coming from the same source and it's not the official PDF ballot. It's not the official PDF that was created for the on-demand printing and third-party printers to send out. It's further degraded from that. So it's someone had it, they scanned it, they rescanned it, they printed it, they faxed it, I don't know. But something happened for them to all be the same, and then they were voted on.
And would that be, so when would that anomaly have occurred? At the printing of the ballot or after when they were scanned into the machine?
So that's a great question that I haven't made clear. So these weren't scanned into the machine. These are photographs of the actual paper ballots that I'm talking about. So it wasn't something that was a machine problem. So it happened when it was printed before it was voted.
Madam Chair,
sorry, that wasn't clear.
No, that's good. Madam Chair, Mr. Buskin, can you tell us approximately how many ballots did you examine that had this identical anomaly on all the ballots?
Over 20,000 that had the anomaly.
Madam Chair, to this point.
Let him finish the answer, please. Go ahead, Mr. Spikin.
Oh, sorry. So I can't say that all 23,000 are exactly the same as one another. They might very well be, but some are degraded slightly more than others, but they're all consistent across the board. But some of the 23,000 are a little bit worse than others of the 23,000.
And if I may ask, that's before the bubble is filled in?
Correct. This happened before it was voted on. They were of poor quality before the bubble was filled in. Whether it was actually a vote or something else, I can't answer. But yes, it was printed poorly, then pencil was applied to it.
Mr. Heap, did that answer your question?
Yes.
Senator Bennett, go ahead.
The point I was requesting, Madam Chair, was to Senator Heap's question of how many ballots did you inspect? I think you testified earlier you've never inspected any paper ballots from the 2020 election. You were inspecting ballot images made from those ballots. Is that correct?
Ballot photographs.
Photographs, whatever.
Yeah, but photographs. I didn't have the piece of paper in my hand. You're correct.
Okay.
Are there any further questions? No. Senator Bennett, and if you could, unless anybody has anything burning, please make this your last question. We do have Mr. Ketchel scheduled to start at 10.
Mr. Chairman, this is my first and last question, apparently. Mr. Spikin, one of the documents you turned in said that you were asked to review scans and microscopic photographs from the 2020 Maricopa election. When were you asked and by whom?
I was contacted by a law firm, Stephanie Lambert, to contact Doug Logan to assist. And that would have been roughly a few weeks before the date of the report.
The date of your, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I'm not sure who's chair. The date of your report was 20th of September, 2021. Is that correct?
Right.
So sometime a few weeks before that, you were contacted by a law firm asking you to assist Mr. Logan?
Correct. I would guess it to be roughly September 1. I don't know exactly the day, but roughly that time frame.
And it was Stephanie Lambert? Is that a person's name or is that a law firm's name?
Both. That's a person's name and the name of the law firm.
So how did you receive these ballot or microscopic photographs, scans and photographs?
I came here to Maricopa County and examined them at the location where they were stored.
Which was where?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It was outside of town in a warehouse building. I may have it in my file, but I don't remember the...
Under the auspices of whom?
Doug Logan is the one who had them, and that's on his file is where, or his server is where I viewed them directly. So I had the server there.
Phoenix Coliseum, perhaps, or?
No,
it wasn't there.
Okay.
It was, I don't remember the place, okay. But it wasn't there, no.
Go ahead, Senator Bennett.
And I think you, Madam Chair, Mr. Spikin, you said in your earlier testimony that the actual paper ballots were not available to you?
That's correct.
Did Mr. Logan or the law firm tell you that those had already been returned?
I believe Mr. Logan told me they had already been returned some time ago. Or I don't know they were returned so much as he left the presence of the ballots. I don't remember which way it was phrased, but they weren't available to me to put my hands on and look at.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think you testified that had you had access to the paper ballots, that would have greatly enhanced your ability to answer some of the questions that came up as you inspected the scans and the photographs?
Absolutely. I mean, it could have given me more insight. I could have definitely answered some of the questions that I got today more completely. And third of all, I might have had a lot more information, and I have told you the paths that would lead to that information, how it works, where it would be, and what the possible conclusions would be as well. So, yes, I think I can't guarantee it, but I think it would be a huge help.
I would think so, too, Madam Chair. Was it ever explained to you, Mr. Spikin, why you had not been contacted when they still had the paper ballots in their possession?
No, I didn't ever ask that. I've been curious about that many times, but I never actually asked the question.
Okay. Yeah, because we had them for several months.
I heard that after the fact. I didn't know it at the time, but I heard that after the fact.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, Mr. Spikin, you're a scholar and a gentleman. Thank you for coming all this way, and really appreciate you.
Well, thank you for having me. And by the way, I mean, if you have any other questions or wanted to have me back on procedures or what I think or where I've seen other problems that could happen from such procedures that you're considering, I'd be flattered to be asked for my opinion like I was today with a more specific answer that I could give. And I'd be happy to come back and try to help.
We'll keep you in touch. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next presenter.